Blog Talk Radio.
I got to learn how to do that. I actually got to take the time to make an introduction like I had in the old days when I used my pseudonym, Rocky Benisher, because I just haven't had the time. Maybe I'll have more time now that I'm not as busy, but I'm busy right now as the host of Stage Right. This is Robert Koopman. I want to welcome you to our weekly show here on Blog Talk Radio, where we seek the conservative voice in theater and theater studies. And it's hard to find, and it's slim pickings. But we do ask the question, why haven't the conservatives stood up and been more artistic? Or is our voice being suppressed? Hey, if you want to join the fun, you can give me a call at 347-884-9659. That number is 347-884-9659. You can always write to me, too, at StageRightAudio1. That's all one word. StageRightAudio1@gmail.com. And I'll be happy to listen to what you have to say and comment on it, which I'm going to be doing in a few minutes. But I want to remind you that this show is always supported strongly by our friends at Xander Business Group. They provide social media monitoring and online risk assessments for your child's online presence. School has started. And do you know what your minor children are doing on Facebook and on Twitter and on Instagram and on Tinder? You know, I say these things, and did I say Twitter? I say these things as if I know what they are. I know the dangers that they possess, especially for young minor children who think that they can put something on the internet and then if they delete it, it goes away. Doesn't work that way. The internet never forgets. It's even more important now. It's for parents to take a proactive role in protecting their child's safety as well as online reputation. So I want to contact Xander Business Group for more information. You can reach them at 760-865-9614. That's 760-865-9614. Or you can email info, at XanderBusinessGroup.com. And Xander Business Group is all one word, and Xander is with an X, XanderBusinessGroup.com. All righty. Well, we haven't been on for a while. To my Jewish listeners, I'd like to wish you a good Yontif, a happy new year. Rosh Hashanah was last week, and coming up, the real festivities. Coming up on Tuesday night and into Wednesday is, of course, the holiday of Yom Kippur. If you are not Jewish and you're saying, why is he pronouncing it funny? It's because I pronounce it the Yiddish way, the way it was brought up in my family. I don't pronounce it the Hebrew way, which would be Yom Kippur or Rosh Hashanah. I say Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. That's the Yiddish way. So I want to welcome you. I already did that. I don't know what I'm talking about. But I want to talk about the New York New Works Festival because it's over. And by the way, if I sound like I've got a clogged nose today, it's because I've got a clogged nose today. I've got a little cold. I'm fighting something. It's a shame. I want to get out more today. It is, I don't know about where you are, but in Columbus, Ohio, it is beautiful. It's not even, I don't think 70 degrees, and it's just around 68, 69, 70 degrees. And it's sunny and it's blue skies and a couple of puffy clouds. Perfect day. And we don't get that a lot in Columbus. We get a lot of gloomy days. Okay, so the New York New Works Festival. You know that we went for the semifinal round at the end of August. And we were waiting for Labor Day because we understood that we were going to find out if we were going to be in the finals. And we found out, and we were not in the finals. I'm sorry to say that my play, The Flower Stand, was not deemed worthy to be in the finals. Now, I know of three of the plays that made the finals. Well, first of all, I mentioned last time about Hotel California. That was the play that weaved together the Eagles' music, which was terrific. Good band, good singers. The story in between, terrible. Very little playwriting going on there just to weave the two stories. Don't forget, these people perform for 35 minutes. By the way, you're only supposed to perform for 25, but I guess you can make allowances. They performed for 35 minutes and had 7 or 8 Eagles songs in there. Even at 3 minutes a song, that's most of the time. It doesn't leave a lot of time for character development or even just good lines, which I don't think they had. At any rate, that show originally was in the finals and then was mysteriously gone from the finals. So to take its place was a show called Casey and Adam, which I talked about on the last show, I'm pretty sure. And that was a little 10-minute sketch, which is really all it was, with a young metrosexual, of course, couple getting together. They're going to move in together. She's moving in with him, but she thinks she's having an hysterical pregnancy, which is a strange fact that she looks up in a book and she's convinced that she has that. He makes all the obligatory dumb sexual related jokes to that. The weirdest part was something about a siren going off, a police siren, and they want to hide. And I can't remember why, because truthfully, I didn't care. And they want to hide, and he's unpacking a large box, so he recommends that they get inside the box. They put it over their head so that their legs are out, which sounds like a pretty darn good hiding spot to me. And that would fool every cop I know. And listen, it wouldn't fool any cop unless the cop was Murray Greshler. And so they hide, but unfortunately she becomes flatulent in the box. And of course he has to take the box off. Boy, is that's real deep. That's good stuff. That was invited into the finals after Hotel California was dropped. And I did ask the producer why. I said, just to find out some feedback from my own play. Why was my play not looked at? And I think part of it was that I didn't have as many votes as a popular play for the Flower Stand as this trivial thing did. And, you know, it was hard to gather votes when, Hotel California comes on. And they have a big crowd there. And then when my show comes on, the 40 of them leave. We had a sparse audience for my show and the other show, and it got less and less. And as I sat there watching the other shows, I noticed that some people would come in, support their show, and leave. They never saw my show. So I just don't think it was handled well. Maybe mine wasn't the most popular. Okay. But I don't think it was handled well. At any rate, another play that made it into the finals was a play called Passage. You know, the one-word title. That's usually a sign of lousy playwriting. And this play, although on a level higher than the previous plays I had seen, I'll give it that, it still was deadly dull. Lost interest right in the middle. I didn't even listen to what the people were saying. It's about this guy who's dying. Listen, if you want to gather audience response and you want them to think that they're thinking anything, have somebody die. It's a perfect, perfect thing. death wins contest. Anyway, and he's dying and he's recording his life, last moments of his life. Who knows? It was rather hard to watch, but only because it was kind of gross. But this was the one that took the cake. And I know I mentioned this before. The female counselor who's helping transition him to death, kind of the assisted suicide matron, she gets down before she will agree to help him kill himself. She gets down on the stage and not facing the audience, thankfully, but takes off her panties and shows him her private parts, which I guess at that point they no longer are private. And I remember sitting there saying, okay, what's this supposed to mean? Okay, and why the obligatory if the obligatory addition of sex. Because if death doesn't get you, sex will. I mean, I guess it's Freudian. I don't know. Anyway, that play didn't win either, thankfully. You know, I guess the theater gods were watching. From what I understand, a play called Going Up won. I don't know anything about Going Up. I'd love to get my hands on it and read it. And boy, if it was good, then it deserves it. But I don't know anything about it. I imagine it was a comedy. That's the sense I get from the title. I don't know why. But I don't know anything about it. I'm not prepared in any way to speak on its merits as a piece of writing. All in all, the New York New Works Festival for me was disappointing. And it was disappointing to my fans out there who went to see the play and thought that I had really done something special. Now, that doesn't mean I didn't do anything special. It just means that there were people who, you know, judged it differently. And I'm trying, folks, and I'm trying to figure out exactly how I can justify the inclusion of some really bad plays in the finals when really good plays were not included. So that's the story. Another year, another festival. We'll see what else we can do. And if I was asked, would you do this festival again? And I would say right now I'm leaning toward no. And the reason is the travel. Do you know how many hundreds of dollars I spent going from Ohio to New York and New York to Ohio in plane fare, in lodging and other things? You know how? Food, of course. Granted, I stayed with my sister when I was in New York, but still I had to stay somewhere on the way because I just wasn't taking that 10.5-hour trip in one shot. And I don't know if you realize, I mean, I spent a lot of money. And it's very, very depressing. If nothing good comes out of this, but hopefully something will, because I'm ever the optimist. All right. A couple of weeks ago on the last, right before the last show, I had asked a question out there, and this was the question I asked. I said, how long do you think it will take for a play to come out about Kim Davis, the Kentucky clerk who refused to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples? Actually, she refused to issue marriage licenses at all when the Supreme Court came down with its ruling. And what do you think the play's agenda will be? And I did this kind of, not tongue-in-cheek, but I knew what we were going to hear, right? I knew if I'm writing to these conservative groups, and I know I'm going to hear people say that, you know, of course there'll be a play and it'll be all left-wing, et cetera. I wanted to hear people's opinion. Well, I got my most of my responses, if not all my responses, from a site called Exploiting the Facts About Liberals. And this is a Facebook group, if you're interested, folks, Getting the Facts About Liberals. They don't have a lot of members. They have about 750, 760 members right now, but that's a start. Anyway, Jim Furman wrote back and he said, take about 6 months. And knowing the left, they'll pounce on it first and use it as a propaganda tool. That's exactly what I'm thinking, right? It's going to be the left. It's not going to be the right who's going to create a play about this woman. Although we could, and we should, if we are supportive of her religious freedom and her right to speak her mind and all those things that we say that we are in favor of, then somebody could write a play in favor of her and where she would be, I guess, the hero. What would this mean? This would mean that we'd be further boycotted. Somebody could write it. Do you think anybody would produce it except a conservative theater group? Are there any? Or a group that is willing to take a chance? But this next response I got on that same site, Exploiting the Facts About Liberals, this one I was really taken aback. This is Tim Moore. He said, I take this issue more seriously than your post implies. It is more serious than, quote unquote, a play. And then Shay McKinn wrote back, agreed, with a picture of Squidward from SpongeBob saying, wow, I don't care. What is wrong with you people? What is wrong, Mr. Moore and Shay McKinn? What is wrong with you? Do you not see someone who is on your side? Do you not see someone who is taunting the left? especially about this Kim Davis thing, and was hoping to see a spirited response and said, you're telling me I don't take this seriously? I absolutely do take this seriously. And what the heck is this about a play in quotes? Okay. And then I wrote back. I said, I take it seriously too, but don't diminish the power of the theater to sway public opinion. I think the left will exploit the issue in a play sooner rather than later. My God, you can't say anything without criticism and dismissal. It's exactly what the left does to us on a daily basis. We shouldn't be doing it to each other. It's kind of like Reagan's 11th commandment, right? You don't speak ill of your fellow Republicans. There's plenty to speak ill about Republicans, but maybe not your fellow conservatives. But where do these people come off? Telling me that I'm not taking it seriously because I'm talking about a play. Yes, it's not my religion, but I am totally in support of Kim Davis. I just don't get it. As Shay Mankin wrote back, I didn't bother to print it out to read it, but, you know, telling me that I am soliciting people to listen to my show and call in, and it's getting annoying. But don't pay attention to it. Then blot it out. Then delete it. Just ignore it. Sorry. He or she, I'm not sure, went on to say that the site exploiting the facts about liberals is a place of free thinkers. Well, what am I? I'm asking you an opinion. They said they want facts and figures. I don't have facts and figures when I'm asking you for your opinion. I'm asking your opinion to solicit conversation so that maybe we could do something so that the conservative voice is so muffled. This is the response I get. I would tell you that I'm going to be like Mark Levin now. You are a moron. There, I said it. I can't do it because of my cold. But I would say, folks, I'd urge you to go to Exploiting the Facts About Liberals because 9 times out of 10, they're right on target. This was the 10th time. Really annoying. All right. I'm on the warpath today. All righty. I'm going to talk today about teaching college students. You may know that I am a college professor, and I'm teaching a class about theater, teaching a class called The Theatrical Experience. And one of the things I want to tell my folks, and I do tell them, these students, some of whom are theater majors, well, no real theater majors, where I teach, there's not a lot of theater majors on the campus that I'm at a satellite campus. But we do have a thriving theater group, and we do have a beautiful theater. And so I tell them that it's not all glamour and the Tonys and Mezhans. There's a lot more to theater. There's a business side to theater. There's a cultural side to theater. There's an artistic side to theater. You know, there's a design and backstage side to theater. And, you know, intellectually, I think these folks, these students know it. But I think they'd prefer to think of theater as jazz hands. Anyway, so the standard text that we use, and since it was the first time teaching it, I said, okay, I'm going to go with the standard text. We use a book called The Art of Theater, Then and Now. The Art of Theater, Then and Now, by William Missouri Downs, Lou Ann Wright, and Eric Ramsey, who's a playwright. And, you know, I'm using this book, and fortunately, because I have, you know, college students, and we meet on Saturday morning, they don't do a lot of the reading, you know, so we discuss cold in class. But I've been doing the reading, and I wanted to share with you a little bit about what this standard text has to say about the nature of theater, the nature of art, the nature of entertainment, and the nature of cultural diversity. Yes, what? You say, what? There's a chapter on cultural diversity in this book? Yeah, there is. Yeah, because we got to throw that in everywhere. So their first chapter is called Theater, Art, and Entertainment. And I'm just going to take out some phrasing that they use. They say, first of all, they say the true value of art is not its price tag, but its ability to make us feel and think. Right now, I'm on board with you. Okay, I'm bored. It is true. I think art does make us feel and make us think. But unfortunately for the editors of this book, most people are not thinking properly or feeling correctly when they see art. And part of that is they describe Joshua Bell, who's an internationally famous concert violinist. And he went into a subway station in Washington, D.C., and he started playing a concert. And lots of people just walked by. Other people stopped. Some knew who he was. Many people left donations because, you know, that's what you're going to see in subway stations. And I've seen jazz performances, and I've seen dance performances, and I've seen opera done in the subway for money, you know, for whatever. So this guy decided to do it. And the editors of the book were pointing out that, you know, so many people walk by, and their assumption, therefore, is that they're not smart enough to stop and appreciate great art. Maybe they were in a hurry. Maybe they had to get somewhere. Maybe some of them were working. You know, it's a subway station. If you're there to watch a concert, what are you doing in the subway station? So anyway, they pose this question. Would you have been one of the walking masses who never heard him, or one of the rare few who knew how to appreciate fine art? So what they're immediately telling us is that you, in order to appreciate art, okay, can't be this visceral thing. It can't be, as they used to say, a reader response thing. It has to be something that you have become educated about. They say art takes time and education. Yet in this hurried world, it seems that fewer and fewer of us have a spare moment to contemplate, appreciate, or learn about it. Even as great art, as technology, makes great art more and more available to all. It takes years of schooling to comprehend the arts, but those who take the time soon find that art becomes an indispensable part of their lives, that it opens up new avenues of understanding about our world and our place in it. Well, it may be true that we don't know a heck of a lot about art, but I also don't think that we have to be schooled in it to attend a theatrical production and get something out of it. That what they're suggesting here, in my opinion, is that you don't get anything out of it unless you get the right things out of it, unless you get the message that you better receive. Who is telling us what this message is? So then they go on about art in this first chapter and the qualities of art, and that there are five basic qualities, that because they do admit that art is relative in the eye of the beholder, and art is human expression, and art has a subject and a medium, and they talk about Plato and Aristotle, and this is all very good. And then they talk about theater, specifically that it is a performing art, unique in that it exists only in the time it takes an actor, singer, musician, or dancer to complete a performance. I think that's a very good point. That's true. We then have the obligatory nod to those walking masses who know nothing. Here's a quote from art educator and art philosopher Harold Taylor. He says, "The spectator must know how to, quote, respond to other people and other ideas different from his own, rather than react against them." What if my response is a reaction against it? "Spectators must learn to accept," this is, quote, "learn to accept difference as natural rather than as a threat to their whole style of life." Who's telling the left this? Who out there is telling the left that you need to respond to, not react against, what the conservative voice has to say? Who is telling them this? Don't they think that they are above that? They're saying, you better think the way we think about things. And if you're a conservative, you better shut your mouth. That's what I read into this. They talk about the politics of art. They say in this way, art is like politics. In a broad sense, it reflects people's conflicting ideas about how we should live, how society should be organized, and how the world is. Okay, that's true. But why don't they ever take the time to hear us? The other point of view they have is that we've already heard your side. That's the traditional side. That's the natural law side. That's the constitutionalist side, non-progressive. We've heard your side. We don't like it, so we're going to reject it. Now you better think and appreciate us. It's a two-way street, Mr. Downs, Ms. Wright, and Mr. Ramsey, editors of this book. It's a two-way street. Okay? Here's more. Humans need structure and theme because the world in which we find ourselves appears to be disorganized or at least lacking in a purposeful design. Nature, says Adam Phillips in his book Darwin's Worms, does not have what we would call, what we could call a mind of its own, something akin to human intelligence. Nor does nature have a project for us. It cannot tell us what to do, only we can. It doesn't bear us in mind because it doesn't have a mind. Some argue that there is chaos to nature, others that nature has too much structure. Either way, we must simplify in order to find meaning or to create it. There's no doubt that art is one of those things that helps us find meaning in what we may perceive to be meaningless or lacking in cohesion. But don't tell me that the world we find ourselves is disorganized or lacking in a purposeful design. For a religious person like Kim Davis, there is a definite design. And but doesn't mean she can't appreciate art. So what you're getting here is a portrait of the world that these editors are presenting to these impressionable college students who, as you know, college is a place where left-wing educators tell conservative, or in theory, conservative people how wrong they are. That's their job. They are there to indoctrinate. They are there to correct the sins of the probably mostly conservative students who either are conservative, which is a terrible thing to these professors, or are brain dead. They are a blank slate. Time to fill it with my left-wing stuff and not let them hear that other stuff that they grew up with about the universe having meaning and an order and a God. No, no, no. Told you I'm on a warpath today. Darwin's Worm. Okay. One other thing they say in this book, in this chapter, is that when we have entertainment, art is separate from entertainment because entertainment is trying to reinforce the values of the dominant culture. They never tell us what those values are. They never tell us who the dominant culture is. I asked this of my class the other day when we were going over that chapter, which we're going to have to pick up in the next episode next week, chapter 3. What do you hear chapter 3 of this book? This is just chapter 1. But I asked my students, first of all, I asked them, what are the shared values that we have that we are trying to protect and reinforce from entertainment? Nobody could give me an answer. I didn't even hear the standard American dream answer. Nobody could give me an answer. I even suggested to them, I said, there is an answer. It's called the Constitution. It's what unites us. It's what makes us unique. It's what we should be following. I then asked them, what is the dominant culture? They weren't sure about that either. But I told them, the dominant culture is white, male, heterosexual Christian. That's what these people are saying. Wait till you hear chapter 3. Political theater, they say. How much time do I got? I got a minute and 14. Political theater. They say, this type of theater is a bully pulpit, an open mic, and a bullhorn that allows the artist to express ideas that are seldom heard in the mainstream media or in the commercial theater. Who is silencing these voices? Where is the conservative voice? Must that be silenced? In addition to being a voice of the disenfranchised of society, it is. Political theater can be designed by the powers that be in order to control the hearts and minds of the people. And then they go on to talk about the Nazis. There's something very wrong in this presentation, folks. Let's pick it up next time. I'm going to play my old conclusion. Let's pick it up next time. Next Sunday at 1:30 p.m., I will be here. I hope you will join me. And it's not because I'm coming apart. Robert Cooperman here is wishing you the best week. To my Jewish friends, have a wonderful Yom Kippur. And we are now exiting stage right.